Hare Krishna, greetings from Vrindavan. Are you still there, everyone? Are you still there? Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Thanks, Henry. I just got to get to where I can get to class quietly. I just came back from Govardhan Hill. We had a group of about 30 people from America, all wanting to do Govardhan Parikram, and it was just a very beautiful thing. Just when they first came, I asked them, you know, we have three options. We can go a full Govardhan Parikram. One second again. The group is right there. They're going around the temple. Okay. So keep in touch with me. I think tomorrow afternoon. You know. Okay. Nice. They're great. Okay. I said you can go around the temple, or you can, once I get sitting down, it's about 5 minutes from my place, you can walk around the temple. Now, when I was not walking around the temple, you can walk around Govardhan Hill. That was one option. Second option, you could do half parikram. Or third is anybody wants to go, arrange to go to the Barpur Bird Sanctuary, which is an incredibly mystical place in Braj. Everyone wanted to go on the full parikram. Every single person. So he went with Jishwan Bar today and by Kirtan, just around the Govardhan Hill. I hadn't done that for a while, but it was really sublime and easy. It was very foggy. It was a little cool. And we went to Shamdas's house. I just happened to meet the people that were his loving assistants, these beautiful Indian Vaishnavas. And some of his people there at his place, just as it was, they invited us. We also took lunch there. And then the people came back for the... So it was really wonderful. And I'm telling people also that consciousness, you know, it's not just the senses. The senses requires a certain attitude to actually have the proper perception. And the classic example is of envy. If people are, I love both of you. Hare Krishna. If people have envy, then they see, they never see good qualities, even if they're there. So there's certain consciousness, and there's a certain consciousness in Vrindavan. Even perception, if you figure it out, what is the difference in our perception? One second. What is the difference in our perception? What is the difference in our perception? When we woke up, the food's digested, it's early in the morning, we're trying to concentrate and hear the name. What's the difference in our perception when we just eat a big feast and we just, you know, collapse afterwards and just woke up? Mind is like a lamb. One second, I just got to get into my house to continue the take me a second. The mind is like a lens. We're not just directly perceiving something, we're perceiving something through a lens. A consciousness, attitude, mode. One second. Okay, I'm outside my place now, excuse me. Consciousness, mode, attitude, perception. definitely affects the how we perceive things. So to see Vrindavan, it's just, it's amazing how a person's attitude, and it's not just, you know, the attitude creates a rose-colored glasses. This is not the material thing to do. The attitude, just like the mood of service, right? What is the mood of service? The mood of service means you move out of the center. It gives you the perspective to see what is in the center. If you're in the illusion, you're in the center, you can't see what is the center. You can't see God. So, okay, now I'm resituated in my place, and I hope, 1 second. So I was speaking about consciousness and perception. So it's not that you're seeing, you know, you're seeing something through rose-colored glasses and things are not actually that color. But it's more like you're seeing things through a lens that corrects the vision so you can actually see what's there. And I'm never ceased to be amazed that if people come into proper consciousness, the depth of the experience they have to actually see what this Vrindavan means. And I feel it. It's my conviction that if you're in the mood of sin, just like when you enter Vrindavan, if you go, we'll go to Radhakund. And what's that Radhakund? What's that Radhakund? When we go to Radhakund, then what's that Radhakund? You got to go past Dhameshwar. It's a Shiva Lingam. Lord Shiva protects the Dham. It's called Big Palm. Now, what happens when you so you pray to Lord Shiva, presiding deity of the false ego, right? Why? Because the false conception of consciousness puts us in the center. Service puts us in our proper position to see the center. Great definition of bhakti. Bhakti means to move from the center. And even if you have a position in the center, in relationship to God, it's still not the center. You see yourself as servant. When I first started to take disciples, I remember the advice I got from a great saint. Don't think yourself guru. If you want to take disciples, don't think yourself guru. Do it as a service to your guru. That's why the bhakti is the path of pure consciousness. This bhakti is the path where there's nothing for oneself. And therefore, it's actually a very hard path to enter. Because the application is difficult. The application is the process is simple. The application is difficult because you have to want to do it. You can do it, but do you want to do it? That's why the whole culture, Acharya Mam, Vijanayam, Navamanyantyakar, you accept the Acharya as one's very self. Because the bhakti means to please. It's not something that you do for a couple of hours in the morning. Bhakti is your whole life. It may be difficult, it may be hard, what you're doing, but if you do what's right, that is bhakti. And what's right is you're doing it to please Guru and Krishna. It's the liberated platform. That's why, technically speaking, if one takes initiation seriously, takes it seriously, and adopts the mood of surrender and service, and focuses life on the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, you go back to Godhead.
you're beyond karma. If you surrender, you're beyond, it's just not, it can be done. Because once you surrender, you move into the plane of Krishna's energy. That's why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very, very cautious about people doing smaranam, meditation on Krishna's pastimes, prematurely. Because it's not a mental creation. It comes from a higher plane. For one who wants to serve that higher plane. That consciousness connects you with the higher plane. Daivyeshu gunamayi mama maya dharatya mamevye papadya mayam etam dharatya. Daivyeshu gunamayi. That divine daivyeshu gunamayi. Daivi Esha Guna Mai. It's divine. The gunas are divine. The energy of this world is divine. Guna Daivi Esha Guna Mama Maya Prabhu. Or maybe you can put your mind, but if you surrender, it's difficult to overcome. But if you surrender, then you'll become why? Because why is Maya, illusory energy, covering our consciousness? Because we don't want to see what's there. That there's an absolute reality. As one said, the center is, at one saint said, the center is everywhere, the circumference is nowhere. That's God. The center is everywhere, the circumference is nowhere. It's unlimited. If you're not happy with that, then you have to be covered from that. And you're only happy with that if you love that, if you want to serve that. And if you want to serve that, then you see that. It's simple as that. That's why Prabhupada's teachings are so brilliant, really. This is, what is it, cut to the chase? So it gets right to the point. It gets right to the point. We may learn so many things, but it's to help us support this conception. I'm not independent. That's a fact. We're always interdependent. I'm not independent. If you want to be independent, that's not bhakti. You can do what you want. You can practice what you want. You want to be independent, it's not bhakti. It doesn't mean you don't get initiative to do things. But not independently. Because you're part of God and you're meant to his service. So if you're independent, it's not bhakti. That's why in bhakti so much is spoken about surrender to the guru. That's why. But it's not an independent, and somehow or other, that's so antithetical to the egotistic conception, to our education, our training, the propagation. It's so antithetical that when we hear it, we shudder. Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Rakshata Srimad, you could call the spiritual world the land of gurus. Because if you're in a mood of Krishna consciousness, you see everything is worshipable except yourself. Material consciousness. We have to hear and hear and hear and hear and hear and hear and hear, and then we have to surrender. That's what Prabhupada taught, and Prabhupada was surrendered. He was surrendered. and so much energy and so much love came through him. So, because I have groups here, it's a revolution. There's 20, I'm with a group of Kastuba Raghunath's group. I'm actually going between groups. And, I was in Bombay for the flower festival. That's 2 tons of flowers falling from the sky. And I went to this place, the Govardhan Echo Retreat, which is an amazing thing. Everybody has 60 monks, such educated, cultured people, humble people. The place is completely self-sustainable. Everything that's built there comes from there. All food comes from there. And what was most impressive, and it just seems so simple, is all the sewage, which means all that water that we generally waste and we throw into the rivers and pollute the rivers, even the Jamuna, we put all that in our excrements. In that Echo Village, everything goes into this big tank. It's about 12 feet tall. All the water goes. And on the top of it, there's a beautiful lush garden. And then I guess there's different layers of rocks and things. So when the sewage goes in there, it comes out as clean water, which is then watering all the vegetables. And the excrement and everything else becomes fertilizer eventually. So it's so sustainable. I remember taking it right in the shower. I don't always feel guilty. I'm just wasting water. It's just going to go. It's going to go. And eating food, it's just a beautiful experience. And I went to Jayapur. I haven't been there for a while. And imagine if Krishna consciousness spread successfully and everyone in New York became pure devotees. That's what Jayapur would look like. That's what Jayapur is. Went to Mangalar Teak. It's a big, beautiful open temple. I went to Mangalar Teak. And basically, the whole city comes. There's thousands and thousands of people coming to Mangalar Teak. Religiously. It's their social life. It's their spiritual life. And they chant songs with the utmost and deepest devotion. With the utmost and deepest devotion, they chant songs. And at the same time, incredible kirtans and people circumambulating it. It's a wave. And then when you look at the people, it's not monks. Not sadhus, it's simple people, businessmen, workers, whatever the case. They sing their heart out. And it's beautiful. Why? Because they have a center beyond themselves. And they position themselves in a position to see, worship, and feel that. Feeling the center is called prema bhakti. Because that center is everywhere, and we're part of that center. And feeling that center is loving that center and feeling the love of that center. And then I came here to go to Vrindavan with a group. And going yesterday to the forests, just chanting and doing kirtan. Wow. How great is that? And then going to that Molly's house, makes flowers, the fisherman guy doing kirtan. And honestly speaking, if you get the right place to eat rich basi rotis, there's nothing more tasty in the world. Bas. anyway, I'm kind of sorry that I'm not able to prepare my classes contiguously. One, I was kind of between subjects, so I'm just giving you kind of a travelogue. Just trying to share with you my realizations and the things that I've experienced here. And now the, you know, more and more people are coming, and we'll just try to serve them. Because that's where pleasure lies. The sentiments of the beloved are not as high as the sentiments of the lover. So this mood of service, and one who has that, has an object of love, and feels love in their heart, they generally, they have that feeling, then they're satisfied. That's the symptom. You're satisfied because you actually got what you're looking for. Okay, somehow or other, I'm going to stop. Are there any questions?
Mahesh. Mahesh?
Who's that?
This is Mahamuni. Do you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mahamuni. I need some good questions because I to keep the class going. Cause, yeah.
Hear me okay, Marsh? I've had some phone problems recently. It's okay?
I can hear you perfectly.
All right. First of all, even as short as it was, I really appreciated the meditation you gave us today, you know, about just a simple point about whether you presuppose you're in the center or whether you're centered on something greater than you. And while you were saying that, it struck me that this is such a simple and clear way to understand the entire kind of, really the entire teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And I was wondering, you know, it seems to me that much of our struggle, and you put it really well, that, you know, you don't want it to be a mental imposition, right? What we're talking about is not a mental imposition the way you might artificially think you can think about higher subjects, but without a clear heart. And I guess what I'm asking is, as we try to go about our daily lives, clearly this is a meditation we should have. And I wonder what kind of advice you can give us in the midst of, let's say, our daily life or something. You know, there's probably some very simple things we could latch our minds onto to remind us of this fact.
Well, you know, that we could really, really think, I really, really think, you see, what happens is in terms of bhakti, different paths stress certain things. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like I'm at Sham Das's place today. And, I explained to the people, theirs was more devious, but it's not that they didn't have kirtan. And we're more, you know, we're more kirtan, non-kirtan. It's not that I'm deity worship. But I think, really, I think we got to get more into chanting notable prayers. Because the nature of prayers puts you in a position to feel. What is prayer, basically? Prayer glorifies the object of your worship, God. And the more you glorify the object of your worship, the more you feel like being in the position of servant of that. You know, so I'm just saying, bhakti is moving from the center. And one way to move from the center is to glorify the center and be happy that it is the center. And at the same time, by doing that, what you're doing is that you're experiencing, because prayer allows you to experience the humble position. So what you're doing is you're becoming happy with the center, and therefore you're becoming happy to be in a position of service to the center. So I think in that, I would say, you know, prayer, Or even, I mean, you want to, like, psychological exercises is really interesting, too. You know, let's say you just every day try to serve one person without them knowing you're doing it and see how that affects your consciousness. Because generally what we do is we're so fruitive that even we serve with the intention of being appreciated and glorified so that we can move more towards the center. You know, I just think everything about bhakti is about this. You know, it's the core feeling. And now we're just talking philosophically about it. That's also happy, you know, that's also good. Just look at it. And you know, one person once asked a question like this, I saw in a class, it was great. What do you want people to think of you? Well, how would you like people to think of you? And people go through so many things, and they say, you know, I like this humbly. But if you ask why do you want people to think about you like that? And you'll see how much everything is appropriated by the ego, even good qualities that you want. And then the worst question is what do you do to get people to think about you like that? So anyway, I don't know what specifically to recommend, you know, and there's different ways to do it. There's kind of a gyanic way, you know, like to put yourself in a good position to contemplate and analyze. There's also a devotional way to feel that in a way, you know, and there's also a karmic way. You know, we enjoy so many things, but give some of the fruits. You know, to God, so that we can see things in relationship to God. And good association. Try to be with people who have that mood, because it's so attractive that we may appreciate and want it. So I don't think there's any one particular perspective I can give, but I like right now feeling very strong that prayer, chanting prayers that touch your heart is a very effective way. Do that consciousness. Any other questions?
Well, can I just kind of respond and roll with what you had said, Mar, some thoughts, and see if it goes somewhere fruitful?
Yeah.
What I like about what you had said is it seems to me that when we reflect on times we've been moved powerfully, typically those involve emotional changes. Not, it's not always intellectual, like learning, although that's part of it. I think that in a lot of rich religious cultures, you have traditions of prayer manuals and prayer books and poetry, as we do, although I think much of it isn't translated. But, it just makes sense that the kind of change of heart, there may be tattva behind it, but it needs to be mediated through our emotions. And I don't know. There's a lot to be done by qualified and sensitive Vaishnava artists to kind of help create a culture of that. And maybe I think, like you often say, that if people aren't inspired, if they can get to Vrindavan, they'll be changed. And there's a lot of reasons why. But I think part of that is they become embedded in a rich culture of Vaishnavism with art and statues and the smells of incense and, you know, changing one's heart requires really a lot. And there's ways in which, I don't know, I think it's part of our challenge or struggle or whatever is to create those kind of conditions for ourselves, right here out in the middle of, America or whatever. I don't know. I'm just thinking about what you had said.
I mean, community. I was speaking about that when the group came. You're on Parikram, and I said, the purpose of Parikram is to experience love. How do you experience love, right? You have to join a group where you have an objective of the group that you buy into, right, that's beyond your personal agenda. So I give an example of a family. If you have a dedicated family, then everyone's serving the family, right? And by serving the family, It serves you better than you can by your own selfish desires. But it creates a consciousness that allows you to move out of the center. And same thing on these yatras, there's a community. And I explained to people, if you surrender to that objective and you have faith that the objective of your group is to serve you better than you can serve yourself, and you surrender to that, you put yourself in a position to experience love. Because as soon as you sit, as soon as you act just by your own personal agenda, then there's something that's an antithetical to that. Unfortunately, you know, I have to go and join the group, so I couldn't spend so much time today. But by next Sunday, I'll be back on my regular classes. And Mooney, I really hope you can come on the Sundays and ask questions. Unfortunately, I actually just got back from Govardhan Hill, and it's the least painful of all the pilgrimages I ever made. The weather was so foggy, cold. It just didn't have the same effect as when it's hot. And I got back, and I greeted Raghunath's group, which came today, and then spoke to his group, ran over here. Now I have to come back to the group. This is my main group. This Sangha is the thing I'm most dedicated to, but temporarily I got a little distracted here. But thank you all for listening, and please don't give up on me. I'll be back on gear with the regular classes next week. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello quickly?
Hare Krishna
Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Wow. Thank you. Hare Go.
You love the class. Okay. Thank
Anybody
you very
else?
Much.
Hare Krishna,
Gail here. Gail, thank you. Hope I gave you something to think about. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.